this is my weekly podcast, Adventures with Postpartum Depression, a show dedicated to sharing stories and spreading awareness about maternal mood disorders. For show notes and more information, please go to my website, ppdadventures.com. There's also a Facebook page, facebook.com/ppdadventures. And now, on to the show. Hello, adventurers. This is episode 68, and this week we have an interview with the lovely Lauren Patterson. I'm going to dispense with my usual lengthy intro because I'm over on another podcast this week. I was interviewed for the Girl Tries Life podcast by the lovely Victoria Smith. Victoria was on the show way back on episode 33, and now I'm on her podcast, which is a podcast that involves stories from different women with all different types of stories talking about what it's like to be a woman in the 21st century. I love the show anyway, so if you're not interested in checking out my episode, I still recommend checking out the podcast because, hey, who isn't looking for a new podcast to add to their feed? In the meantime, though, I'm going to turn it over to Lauren and her story of antenatal and postpartum depression. Hi, Lauren. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
All right, so I know quite a bit about your story, which I know you call the hellscape of terrors that just wouldn't end.
Yeah.
So where do you think is the best part to start?
So I guess my adventures in antenatal and postpartum depression really began after my miscarriage between the birth of both my daughters. But I've tangled with depression pretty much throughout my life. I think my first experience was my sophomore year of high school, and of course I didn't know it then that I was going through the depression. I just thought that, you know, life sucked and everything was terrible, so I didn't really deal with it that well, but I managed to get through it. And then the other episode that kind of really reshaped my life was my freshman year of college, when I remember being dropped off in my dorm, and then after my parents left, I just broke down. Like, it started the day I moved into my dorm, and it got really bad throughout my first semester. I wasn't making any friends, I wasn't adjusting well, I wasn't coping, and I was just miserable. So over Christmas break, I broke down and I told my mom everything that was going on, and so that was my first experience. She got me in touch with a therapist and a doctor, and that was my first experience taking medication. Because it was my first experience taking medication, and because I was 19 and dumb, and I still had a lot of guilt and shame over the way that I felt, I wasn't really honest with my therapist or my doctors, and that led to many different diagnoses. At one point, I was diagnosed as bipolar, which could not be farther from me. And so because of that, I was on so many different medications. They were like, well, let's try this. And I don't even remember all the medications I was on. I know I was on lithium at some point. But so this went on for another year. And I was... I didn't recognize, because I didn't know what was normal, that the reactions that I was having to these medications weren't normal, and they were actually harming me and not helping me. I, for lack of a better word, literally went crazy. I was out of my mind. I did not have control of my thoughts. I was making stupid decisions. I just kept spiraling deeper and deeper and darker and darker, and it got to a point my second semester of my sophomore year, where I attempted to take my own life. That was horrible. It resulted in a 3-day stay in the ICU, followed by a 2-week stay in the mental health behavioral ward of a hospital, which that comes into play later because, fast forward a bit, in my postpartum journey, when it got so bad that my mom and my husband wanted me to go to the hospital, I kept thinking back to this time in my life where, apart from the last year and a half, those 2 weeks were unfortunately one of the worst experiences of my life. We've come a long way, I think, in mental health care. This was 13 years ago, so the way I was treated in that mental health ward was a little bit differently than I think I probably would be treated now. But it was a terrible, terrible experience, unfortunately.
I am so sorry to hear that.
I know. I really am too. I think it in part is because I was coming down from all these medications that I was on and my body was adjusting. And like I said, also it was that they didn't, I don't feel like they knew how to help me, or I don't know. Like I said, times have changed and I hope it's better now than it was. But in any case, I got through it, and a lot changed in my life after that. I moved home. I finished school at a different university. I changed the course, the direction of my life. I got better help. I got better meds. I made better friends, and my life started, you know, chugging on as normal. And I've experienced a few bouts of depression here and there since then. Nothing as awful as it was. But yeah, so that's, and now we're here.
You've got the gears in my head turning as I'm thinking back to a bunch of people who during my first year of college had to like drop out and move home and go back to the college there. And, you know, we were young, we were 18 and 19. We didn't know what was going on. And now looking back, I'm like, oh my God, they were all probably dealing with their own, like, their demons.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, 18, 19, your brain still isn't fully functioning. You throw them, or fully developed, you throw them into this new life situation where they're on their own, and college is such a different environment. And, I mean, it's not surprising that some people don't adapt to that change very well.
No, I'm thinking of one girl who was my friend's roommate, and she was always on the phone with the boyfriend, the hometown honey. And, you know, we all talk about her behind her back, like, oh, she can't just cope, like, that's pathetic. And now, like, I'm sitting here having, like, oh, I'm sending her love, like,
oh, I know. Yeah, I had my college roommate was my best friend, and who still is my best friend, actually, from when we were 6 years old. We're 33 now, so we've been friends a long time. And I just recently had a conversation with her about it, because she didn't really understand. She did great. She was wonderful. She adapted wonderfully. But I just recently had a conversation with her just about everything that went on our freshman and sophomore year. And she's like, I'm so sorry. She's like, I just didn't understand. And I'm like, well, you know, it's okay. You know, we both did stupid things, but, yeah, it's just growing older and understanding, you know.
There's a reason that doctors go to medical school.
Yes. Yes.
All right. So catching up more to the present. So you have a 3-year-old.
I have a 3.5-year-old. Yes. And, you know, when I was pregnant with her, and even, no one ever talked to me about postpartum. I didn't really even know what it was, but surprisingly, I never went through anything postpartum with her. You know, it took us 2 years to get pregnant with her, and I was on Clomid, which is awful, but so we finally got pregnant, and I had a textbook pregnancy, textbook labor. I'm sorry, you're going to hate me for this. I only pushed for 30 minutes with her. She was out. It was wonderful. And then apart from just adjusting into new motherhood and figuring out breastfeeding and the sleep deprivation, everything was really wonderful with her. You know, the first couple weeks were hard, and then we just kind of seamlessly transitioned into life of with a baby. So that was great. And she's wonderful. And so then we decided to get pregnant again. And we were really scared that it was going to take another 2 years to get pregnant. And I did not want to go back on Clomid. So I had my IUD removed, in June of 2016. And then in August of 2016, I found that I was pregnant. So we were elated that it didn't take 2 years. I was also kind of shocked because I thought I would have a little bit more time. But, you know, that's life. So we told our family, and everyone was really excited. And then, unfortunately, I lost that pregnancy. And I had known friends and relatives that had gone through miscarriages. And I was always, you know, like, oh, I'm really sorry. Like, that sucks. I'm here for you. But until you go through one, it's so bizarre. And it's really scary too, because I went to the doctor and there was, they couldn't find a heartbeat. And then it was a couple days later that I started bleeding, but they were telling me, they were like, you know, if you don't pass this on your own, we're going to have to do a DNC, and like complications could be this, this, this. And it was, so I had to make sure, I had to check that, or they had to check that my body had evacuated all pieces, or else I'd have to go in and have this procedure. So I had to go have my blood drawn, and I just kept thinking about my daughter and if something happened to me. And it was just, it was so emotionally turbulent that I just remember being so scared for my daughter that something was going to happen to me and she wouldn't have a mom. So that's when my anxiety really peaked. I just kind of became hyper-vigilant about my health, really.
How far along were you in the pregnancy?
I was between 6 and 7 weeks.
Okay.
But I found out, because the first time we went to the doctor, they couldn't find anything. And they were like, you're super early. You're like 4 weeks.
Right.
So then I went back like to make sure everything was going okay. And that's when they couldn't find a heartbeat. And then a few days later, I miscarried. So it was about between 6 and 7 weeks.
I just think it's so important to share these stories, because miscarriage, like, as much as there's a taboo about postpartum depression, there's just an equally powerful taboo about miscarriage. And people are kind of like, oh, 6 to 7 weeks, you should just, like, suck it up. That's hardly a pregnancy. It's like, no, that's a pregnancy.
Yeah,
you're entitled exactly. to these feelings.
I mean, the moment, let's be honest, when you take a pregnancy test, the moment that double pink line appears, like, you are a mother. You immediately start thinking about your future, what your future looks like. Like, you're thinking about names and baby clothes. It doesn't matter how far in your pregnancy you were. That is a life that's inside you. And now that life is gone. And that is something that's really hard to, I mean, it's, you struggle with that. I mean, and that's universal. Every woman I've ever talked to who's had a miscarriage is like, yeah, it's hard no matter how far in your pregnancy you are. So yeah, we need to definitely do a better job about talking about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, even if it's an unwanted baby, even if you're thinking yeah. about abortion, then you have the miscarriage. There's still, I just haven't heard anyone talk about it as not being a loss.
Exactly. Well, and it's not just that it's a loss. It's that so much is going on inside your body. Your hormones are going crazy, and it's going to affect you in a physical and a psychological way.
Yes.
Like, there's no getting around it.
Yes.
Your body is changing. It's crazy.
So then, how long did it take to get pregnant with your second daughter?
Ha. So, yes. So the doctor told us to wait 3 months before, or 3 cycles before trying again. And so on our third cycle, we tried again. And that would be in October. So I started my period on October 14th, and then I found out I was pregnant November 15th. So once again, it was straight away. Apparently, I turned into Fertile Myrtle after dealing with infertility for 2 years. So that was definitely, I found out I was pregnant. My first call was to my sister to get the name and number of a therapist that she had been recommending to me. And the second call, 5 minutes after that double pink line appeared, was to the therapist, because I knew the moment I saw that positive sign that I was going to have some serious anxiety about this pregnancy. And it was a lot. I was scared of losing it. I was scared of losing the pregnancy. I was scared of not losing the pregnancy. Mm-hmm. If that makes any sense, because I was just scared.
Right.
So I called the therapist, and luckily she got me in that day and caught her up to everything that was going on. But so I had a therapist from day one, which is good. And I didn't tell a lot of people. I told my husband, obviously, and I told my mom because I was having so many conflicting emotions about this pregnancy. It was wanted, it was planned, and yet I was so scared.
Mm-hmm.
Had I known what was coming my way, I was nauseous. I was very, very nauseous in the beginning. And I had a little bit of morning sickness with my first, but I never threw up, and it went away about 10 or 12 weeks. But I had vomited 20 times before my 8-week ultrasound prenatal appointment, and I was telling my doctor about it, and she's like, "Oh, morning sickness, that sucks." She said, "But it's a sign of a healthy pregnancy."
Right.
Okay, great. So she gave me Diclegis, which is what they give you now instead of Phenagrin or Zofran. And she was like, you know, it should subside by 12 weeks or whatever. And it did not subside. It got worse. I was vomiting not every day, but on the days that I was vomiting, it was several times a day. Got to a point when I was about 14 weeks that I couldn't. I was dehydrated. I needed to go to the emergency room. So I went to the emergency room, and, you know, they gave me fluids, and they gave me a dose of Phenagrin, and I remember, I felt so patronized. They were like, "Oh, is this your first pregnancy?" I'm like, "No, it's my second pregnancy, and no, I didn't have these symptoms," and they're like, "Oh, this is normal," and I'm like, "I don't think it's normal," because it was painful. Like, it was very painful in my stomach, in my abdomen. So anyway, they pumped me full of fluids, and they sent me home, and they're like, you know, it should get better. And it did get better. It got way, way worse, to where at 17 weeks pregnant, I had to go back to the ER. The vomiting was worse. The pain in my abdomen was worse. It was awful. So they treated me with Phenagrin and gave me fluids, and they gave me pain medication. And that time they sent me home with a prescription for Phenagrin, thank God, because I would not have gotten through the rest of my pregnancy without it. And so at this point, I'm not gaining weight. I'm unable to care for my, at the time, 2-year-old daughter, which, you know, 2-year-olds are kind of a handful. And I started getting extremely anxious about my health. It also kind of, it definitely then opened up a hole of depression that I started falling into, because I couldn't eat, I couldn't take care of my daughter, I was constantly sick. I was very lucky, my mom is retired, so I had her help me out a lot. But I kept waiting and waiting, holding out hope that I was gonna get better, and I did not get better, spoiler alert. At 20 weeks pregnant, I was having pain so horrible that I couldn't see. I couldn't breathe. I was vomiting. I was sobbing. I was writhing in pain. I couldn't walk. My husband had to carry me to the car. And I was wheeled into the ER, actually, and they took one look at me, and they sent me straight up to labor and delivery, which they checked the baby. Everything was fine with the baby. I wasn't in labor. Whatever was happening, it was happening to me. So they did a bunch of ultrasounds, and basically they concluded a few things. at 17 weeks, I was diagnosed with hyperemesis, which obviously, and then they had working theories as to what was going on. They suggested biliary colic, cholecystitis, gallstones, pancreatitis, just a whole host of things. But the problem is, or was, that they couldn't do any more or further testing, because at that point in my pregnancy, it was too invasive. And my gallbladder or appendix wasn't in danger of bursting, so they didn't want to do unnecessary surgery on a pregnant person. So these episodes, basically, I had 7 different gastroenterologists and surgeons come in and tell me, "Something's wrong with you, but sorry, you're pregnant, so you're just gonna have to tough it out these next 19 weeks and then come back in, and once you give birth, and we'll figure it out."
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. So that, and I still remember, oh gosh, I remember, because I couldn't, any type of food besides bread or baked chicken would set off whatever it was, whether it was cholecystitis or a gallbladder attack, which I don't know if you've ever had a gallbladder attack, but they, oh God, they're horrendous. They're awful. Just excruciating pain. And I, when you tell a pregnant woman, like, she can't eat pizza, like, right. she can't eat a hamburger, it sucks so bad. And I remember one of the doctors was like, he said something, he made the comment that, like, oh, you know, your baby is worth not being able to eat pizza. And I just looked at him, and I was like, asshole, like, of course my baby's worth it, but I am here, I'm starving, I'm in pain, and that's what you tell me? And then I had another doctor tell me that he had had a patient with similar symptoms as me, a pregnant woman, and by the time she gave birth, she was completely emaciated, but she had a healthy baby. And I'm like, hey, that doesn't sound, being emaciated doesn't sound conducive to a good labor. So it was really just, the more times I went to the hospital and talked to these doctors, which I had several, I had four or five stays, extended stays in the hospital, like 2 to 3 nights each, because I was in so much pain that I couldn't function. And I started feeling like I was an incubator mm-hmm. instead of a human person. And that's when the resentment really, really crept up. Sorry, I'm trying to get my thoughts together. Because it's so horrible to say, but I began really resenting this tiny life inside of me, this life that was planned and was wanted. I became aggressively apathetic to her existence. I started having fantasies about miscarrying. I started dreaming about waking up in a pool of my own blood and feeling relief. And it just, these thoughts just got in my head and they festered and they spread. And it was so terrible living inside of that head. And I know now that, I mean, depression is just a lying monster. And those thoughts actually didn't belong to me. They belonged to my depression. But at the time, I was living in this hell that was my brain, and also my body. Every single aspect of my life was just dark and bleak and hopeless, and it was terrible. It was so terrible. I would never wish any kind of the physical pain that I had during pregnancy on anybody. By the time I gave birth, I weighed less than I did when I got pregnant. Thankfully, my daughter was beautiful and healthy and came out 6 pounds, 9 ounces. But I, you know, and I've talked to my therapist about this. I have postpartum PTSD from this pregnancy. Mm-hmm. I became obsessed with, oh gosh, I became obsessed. It's funny the things that you forget about when you're past them and then pop back into your brain. I became convinced that I was going to die in childbirth because everything was going so wrong in my pregnancy. I just knew that I was going to die. And I was scared, but I was kind of okay with it because I was like, I don't have another option. Like, everything is terrible. Everything is going wrong. Like, of course I'm going to die in childbirth. Childbirth is dangerous. Something is going to happen. I'm going to bleed out. I'm going to need an emergency C-section. And I got to the point where I was having conversations with my husband about, like, how to take care of the kids once I was dead. Mm-hmm. And he was, you know, please don't stop saying that. Right. Like, no, we need to talk about this. This is important. So it definitely scared him. And then finally, my mom had been telling me and my sister had been telling me, like, really need to start medication. But the thing was that that's the other thing. I'm sorry. My brain is just, like, scrambled right now. I'm going off on tangents.
I love tangents. You know that.
Well, good. You're going to love this one. So because none of the doctors could figure out what exactly was wrong with me, I was literally on a dozen different medications throughout my pregnancy. I don't even know what they were, like Zantac, and it doesn't matter what they were. But we tried different medications so that my body could function properly and without pain. And so I didn't want to add another medication that could possibly have risks to my baby into that mix. Mm-hmm. But finally, I did, when I was 34 weeks pregnant, and I was just, I was a zombie. I wasn't even a zombie, because zombies move. I was a rock. I was a boulder. I didn't move. I finally went and talked to my primary health care physician about medication, and she was wonderful. God, she listened to me for an hour, and she gave me a big old hug, and she tried to figure out what was wrong with my insides as well. But so she prescribed me Zoloft, and she started me off at 25 milligrams, but she said to start at 12.5 to work my way up, which good thing she did, because boy, did that make me very nauseous when I first started it. So I started Zoloft, baby dose, and by 36 weeks, I was feeling like I mentally, like I, any pregnant person should feel, no, not should, that's, I hate that word. But I was feeling like I wanted to feel, excited about the baby, not wanting her to go away, you know, that kind of stuff. So yeah, so that, finally, my last hospital stay was when I was 37 weeks pregnant. And of course my blood pressure was just bottom, because I wasn't eating anything and I was just so weak and I was in so much pain, that they decided to induce me, go ahead and induce me at 38 weeks, because I could not stay pregnant. So 38 weeks I was induced.
And during all this pregnancy hell horror show, were you were talking to your therapist like every week?
I think when I was pregnant it was every other week. Okay. Or just a couple times a month. And it was really just kind of a venting session at first. She did help me. But it was the Zoloft that really, I guess the combination between the Zoloft and the therapy that, you know, got me to a place of, okay, like this is going to be okay.
Your brain's not firing the way it should fire, sometimes all you can do is take a medication to jumpstart it.
Yes. And honest to God, that was, I remember the relief that I felt just after a week, and the fog started to lift and the anxiety started to depart. And I'm just like, oh, this is how I'm supposed to feel as a pregnant woman. Like, this is how I'm supposed to felt the past 36 weeks. And I was kind of mad at myself for not starting it sooner, but kind of not, because like I said, I didn't want to take another medication on top of all the medications I was taking.
So then 38 weeks they induce.
38 weeks they induced. My labor was a little bit rougher than my labor with my first, because my blood pressure was so low. I mean, I had a resting blood pressure of like 80 over 60. Like, it was nothing. And because of that, the anesthesiologist didn't want to give me a full dose of the epidural. However that works, we halved it. And it didn't work. It kicked in a little bit, but I could still, on the left side of my body, I could feel everything, and I was miserable. And I begged and pleaded and cried, for him to come back in and give me the full dose. And God bless my nurses. They got it done. So I was in quite a bit of pain, for quite a bit of my labor, and I never ever had any kind of plan to go natural, not even with my first. I knew I was going to do epidural all the way. So I was in some serious pain. But then it kicked in and I was able to rest a little bit. The nurse came in and she checked me and she's like, all right, it's time to push. And honestly, I was so excited at this point to push. I was so excited to meet her and get her outside of my body. And I knew this was, because I remembered that moment from my first, and I knew that this is going to be my last baby. And I'm like, I want to enjoy this. I can't wait to push it out. I can't wait to see her. See the little rascal who's been causing so much trouble. And so I started pushing. And I was only pushing for about 15 minutes when my blood pressure bottomed out. And I went to a place. I wasn't there. I blacked out for a moment, and then I remember opening my eyes, and I can still remember it so vividly. I was staring up at the ceiling, and I had no idea where I was. I knew that I was supposed to be doing something, but I didn't know where I was. I didn't know what my name was. I knew that I needed to try and speak, but I didn't know how to speak. It was the most bizarre experience of my life. My mom was in the room, with me, and she told me later that she thought I had thrown a clot. She thought that I was on my way out because the look on my face was just, there was nothing there. So I come to, and I have an oxygen mask on my face and a baby on my chest. I don't remember pushing her out. I was told later that they had to get her out. The doctor had to cut me. She was almost out, but the cord was wrapped around her neck twice, and I was completely unresponsive, and they needed to get her out. So I don't know how they got her out, but they did, and they set her on my chest, and I woke up with an oxygen mask on my face and a baby on my chest. I was like, oh, okay. So I hate that. I really hate that. Because I don't remember my child being born. I remember being in this weird dimension where nothing made sense. Mm-hmm. Because of course something would go wrong during my childbirth. I was right about that. I'm really glad I wasn't right about me dying or something happening to me. But I knew something was going to happen. It had to happen. This whole pregnancy was a shit show. I mean, why shouldn't labor and delivery be any different? But she was there, and I came back, and a couple of hours later, everybody was healthy. Everybody was good. She was healthy. I was healthy. I was finally not pregnant, which was the greatest feeling in the world. She was there. I am probably an anomaly because I know a lot of women, they say their postpartum depression began immediately after giving birth. I was euphoric for the first 2 weeks of her life because once she was born, every physical pain in my body, the nausea, the vomiting, it disappeared. I mean, literally just like that. She was born at 5:47 p.m. By 10 o'clock that night, I was up walking around. My husband brought me a cheeseburger that had been sitting under the cafeteria warmer for about 2 hours, and it was the best cheeseburger I had ever eaten in my life because it was a cheeseburger. And, I cannot express in words, in any language, the physical relief that I felt after my daughter was born for those first 2 weeks anyway. It was the most incredible, sweet relief of my life.
So what happened with your health issues where these doctors had all been saying something was wrong with you, but they couldn't diagnose it? Was there something wrong with you, or did it just turn out you had, like, the worst pregnancy?
It turned out that they were all right. It was either biliary colic or cholecystitis or what have you, but it was pregnancy-induced. So as soon as my body wasn't pregnant anymore, it went away. I mean, just like hyperemesis does, once you're not pregnant anymore, you're fine. Like, that's right. That's the only cure. One more person, it had told me, oh, well, the only cure to this is giving birth. I'll slap you across your face. I never went back to any one of the gastroenterologists or general surgeons ever again. And I'm really glad because I didn't want to see any of them. They were all, doctors. None of them had any good bedside manner either. I'm a pregnant woman. Like, at least, I don't know, be nice to me.
I had to do one trip to a gastroenterologist with my first pregnancy. And what I remember is going into the room, and first off, like, the waiting room is all, like, people who are, like, 80 and 90.
And, oh, yeah.
And then I'm in the actual exam room waiting for the doctor and seeing the largest industrial tub of Vaseline that I didn't even know they committed. And just being like, oh. Being like, and nothing, there were no physical exams, but just this horror, like, oh my God, what are they going to do to me now?
I didn't see a giant tub of Vaseline. If I had, I would have been very frightened.
Yeah, that stuff needs to be in the cupboard. Like, let's not have that out there just to, like...
Yeah, or at least, like, put a blanket over it.
Yeah, just, yeah, cover that shit.
That might make your pulse quicken a little bit, so...
Just a little. So you had 2 weeks of euphoria.
I had 2 weeks of euphoria, and I was that annoying mom who was glowing with her newborn. I feel great. I feel wonderful. I, honest to God, I really thought that I had dodged any kind of postpartum anything. I was still sleep deprived, but I was used to that because I wasn't sleeping towards the end of my pregnancy. Of course, it's very different when you have a newborn that you have to take care of. And oh boy, my newborn did not like to sleep. That was a challenge. She, not even during the daytime, she just, she preferred to be awake, that little tough cookie. So first 2 weeks were great. And then, my husband went back to work, and the sleep deprivation and the reality of caring for a newborn, and a 2.5-year-old really set in. I didn't have as much anxiety. I know a lot of people talk about, you know, checking on the baby and making sure that their chest is going up and down. I didn't have any of that. I had rage. I had a lot of rage, and a lot of deep, dark depression. I remember I was about 4 weeks postpartum. So my husband was back at work. I stay at home. And so I was trying to give him more sleep. And so I was doing all of the middle of the night wakes and feeds, because I was breastfeeding. And I had gotten to a place, had about 4 weeks postpartum, where I started having panic attacks. Sorry, when I'm talking about this, it's actually hard to talk about because it's hard to remember.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you don't sleep, your brain can't file away memories of the day. And so all of this is coming to me, like, I remember flashes of things. Mm-hmm. I remember beating my hand against the wall in the hallway when I was walking to my daughter's nursery. I remember the feeling of my eyes just burning. It was around 4 weeks postpartum, and I'm going to sound like a monster. This is when I knew that I needed to go back to the doctor to get help, or rather when my husband knew. I remember I just wanted to go to sleep. It was about 3 a.m. I hadn't slept in 4 weeks, and my daughter was in a rock and play mm-hmm. in her nursery. And I was on the floor. I was pounding my fists against the floor because I had so much rage and anger in me, and I had nowhere to get it out. And I must have looked like a feral animal. I mean, it was just a visceral pounding of my fist against the floor. And I sat up and I screamed at my newborn. I screamed at her. She's in her rocker, but she's crying. She's inconsolable. And I'm just screaming at the top of my lungs in her face. I'm just like, go to sleep, go to sleep. And I probably dropped some F-bombs in there. So I'm basically cussing out my newborn, and I'm beating my fists against walls and floors. And my husband walked in, and I don't know what he thought, but I remember he came in, he wrapped his arms around me, and I was shaking, and I was sobbing, and I couldn't stop. And he was trying to calm me down, and I was as inconsolable as my newborn was. I couldn't stop crying. And finally he physically picked me up and he carried me back into the bed. And he told me, like, stay here. I'm going to, like, I'll stay with the baby. You stay here for the rest of the night. And I did. And I fell asleep immediately, I know. And then the next morning, he said, we need to have a conversation. So I called my doctor, and she got me in. And again, I love my primary care physician. She's wonderful. She talked to me for like an hour. And we decided to up my dosage. And so we did that. And then, because of course, at 5 weeks postpartum, me and my 3-year-old came down with a stomach bug. But this wasn't just any stomach bug. This stomach bug was the one from hell that lasted 3 weeks.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, my 3-year-old, she's tiny. She was 30 pounds. She lost 5 pounds. Mm. You know, keep in mind, I'm just coming back from a pregnancy where I couldn't eat anything. I lost another 10 pounds with this stomach bug. And so I went to the emergency room, and the doctor said, you cannot have your newborn anywhere near you. Like, that child cannot be in the same house, because it would be, you cannot give this bug to your 5-week-old. So my mom, who's a saint, took my newborn for 3 days. And I knew something was really, really wrong when my mom called me and she was like, okay, you know, we'll be over in about an hour. And I spent that hour on my bathroom floor sobbing, because I did not want my 5-week-old back. I did not want her back. I didn't want her in this house. I was dreading it. My stomach was churning. I didn't want any part of my daughter. And I hadn't breastfed her for 3 days. I was pumping to keep my supply up. And I felt physically sickened by the thought of breastfeeding her. And of course, because I was so sick, I wasn't able to take my medication. Because I was just vomiting everything up. So I basically had to start from scratch again. And actually, I couldn't take my Zoloft for 3 weeks because I couldn't keep it down. Mm. So for 3 weeks, at 5 weeks postpartum, I could not take medication. And it sucked. It was really, truly terrible. I think back to those times and I shudder. It's so awful. It's so awful. It's so awful to feel that way. It's so awful to feel the shame of not wanting your own baby, to feel like your mother would be a better mother. And it just hurts to think about, because I love her. I just love her so much. And it hurts to think that there was a time where I didn't love her. I didn't want her. It's horrible.
It gets better.
It does get better, and it has gotten so much better, thank God. But it got worse. It got worse before it got better. My daughter turned 3 in October. So I had Annie in July, and Scarlett turned 3 in October. And by this point, I had gotten back up to my normal dosage on Zoloft, and you know, I thought I put in an IUD so I could stop worrying about getting pregnant, because that was plaguing me. And so, you know, I thought that we were on the up and up, but then in October I started having really bad panic attacks that led to just complete disassociation. There are large chunks of time missing from my memory, because I would go into this, and it would be the smallest thing that would set me off. A leaf. I remember staring at a leaf on my living room floor that my dog had tracked in from outside, and I was holding my baby. And she was crying, and my 3-year-old was watching, you know, Peppa Pig or something on the iPad, and it just, like a movie, I just zeroed in on this leaf, and I was so hyper-focused on this leaf, and then everything just stopped. I was so ragey about this leaf because I had just vacuumed the living room. And I stared at this leaf and I could not move. I could not pick this leaf up. I was so irrationally angry. And then I lost it. I set my baby down in a safe spot because I was at least aware enough to do that. And I was upstairs and I was shaking. And I don't even know how long I was up there because, like I said, I just kind of disassociated. My brain just went to this really weird place. And then it happened again. This was the really scary one. This one sent me back to my doctor. We were at an orchard for my daughter's third birthday. We were at a pumpkin patch picking pumpkins. And she said she had to go to the bathroom. So I took her to the bathroom. And as soon as we got in there, she started throwing the most epic tantrum that she's ever thrown in her life. And I was already on edge because it's October. It's a pumpkin patch. The crowd is crazy. It's hot for October. I've got this 3-month-old that it's just, I was on edge anyway. So she starts screaming. Of course, my brain shuts down and I go into full fight or flight mode. I come out of the bathroom. I throw my 3-year-old at my husband and I take the stroller that has the 3-month-old in it and I just start walking. I apparently was gone for 45 minutes. I don't remember walking. I don't remember getting to where I got. I do remember, I can see like a dream, a woman's face. And I think she was trying to help me because I think she could see that something was clearly wrong. And I can see her face and I see her mouth moving, but I don't hear words. And then her face kind of goes out of my memory. But my husband found me 45 minutes later and I was standing under a tree, just like breathing in and out slowly. He came, he was like, "What just happened?" And I was like, I don't know, but I think I'm going crazy. I'm pretty sure I'm going crazy. So went back to the doctor after that. And she was asking me, it's so funny. She was asking me, you know, when these symptoms started again, because they had kind of subsided for a while. And I called my husband to ask him, I was like, "When did you kind of notice me getting, you know, with these panic attacks and my mood starting to slip?" And he pinpointed a date and we actually figured out that it was like a couple of days after I had my IUD put in. And so bells and alarms start going off in my head. I was like, "Oh, that could be it." And then because everything is connected, I start thinking about my depressive episodes in college. I had just started birth control before I went to college. My sophomore year of high school, that's when I started menstruating. I was a late bloomer. And so my head is exploding at this point. I'm like, "Oh, okay, these hormones have a catastrophic effect on my mental health." I did have the IUD after my first daughter was born, and maybe I was just, since I was in a better place already, it didn't really affect me. So I made the choice to take my IUD out, and within a few days, I felt immediately better. Unfortunately, mental health, nothing about it can be a quick fix, so it didn't fix everything, but it did help. And my husband has since had a vasectomy, so we are definitely done having children. I have PTSD from my pregnancy. I have nightmares about being pregnant. I had a nightmare last night that I was pregnant. I woke up and was like, "Ugh, no, it can't happen." But in any case, so yeah, hormones. Hormones suck. Hormones are awful. They need to not be the way that they are. I don't think enough credit is given to us women for everything that we have to go through, pregnancy and childbirth and postpartum, and generally just being of childbearing age. How do we do it? I don't believe any woman who says, "Oh, I never had any postpartum issues." Like, oh, come on. How can you not? Anyway, the end.
And so you got the IUD out and you started to feel better.
I started to feel better, but, and then, honestly, I do not do well when I don't sleep. I am one of those people who cannot function if mm-hmm. I don't sleep. And my baby, God bless her, just did not sleep. She did not sleep. My parents watched her for a couple of days, in November just to give me a break, and they were so exhausted after that. They were like, we don't know how you've been doing this for, you know, however many months you've been doing this. And then the holidays rolled around, and man, holidays with a baby, they're tough. Because I was so hypervigilant about trying to get everyone on a schedule or trying to get my baby on a schedule. And then the holidays came in and we had get togethers and parties and just so many events. And those really took a hit on my mental health because I didn't want to be anywhere near them. I spent my time at holidays hiding in a back bedroom, with my baby because I didn't want anyone to touch her. I just wanted to be alone. And of course everyone wants to pass around a baby. And the one time, the first party we went to, and I let everyone hold her and pass her around, and she, I mean, not even for 10 minutes did she sleep that night because she was so wound up. And I was like, never again. This is not happening again. So the holidays were really hard. You know, everyone's so happy and cheerful, and I'm so miserable, and it's so cold outside, and you know, gosh, we were just passing around the same cold, me, my husband, and my three-year-old, and then my five-month-old got it and didn't sleeping. And it's again, I'm still having the panic attacks come back. My doctor did give me Klonopin for when they got really bad, and I had to use it more often than I would have liked. But the holidays roll around, and then it just gets really dark. I think do have seasonal affective disorder. Every winter I get pretty bummed out, and then when you throw on top of it postpartum depression, anxiety, PTSD, when the nights get long and dark, it does something very, very bad to my brain.
Where do you live?
In January. Sorry, go ahead.
Where do you live?
I live in Kentucky.
I mean, I knew it was a place with a fun accent, but...
A place without an accent?
With a fun. I like your accent.
It's with soothing. A fun accent, yeah. Oh, my family, when I'm around my family, I get real twangy. I'm in Louisville, so I'm in the, you know, the big city, but, yeah, we have the winters that don't end in Kentucky. We're finally seeing a little bit of spring, thank God. That has helped my mental health more than anything, is just being able to get outside and take a walk. But up until a couple weeks ago, I mean, we still had snow on the ground and ice in the trees. It was awful. I hate winter. I need to move to San Antonio or, San Diego, somewhere where it's always warm.
Come to Pasadena.
You know what? I'll be there. I'll be on the next plane. So yeah, so it's cold and dark in January, and you know, I remember the date exactly. I don't know why it sticks out in my head, but it's January 17th. So my baby was 6 months old. I had not slept in 6 months. My three-year-old was getting really defiant. She got really into her three-nagers. I was not coping with her well. And I know she was probably feeding off of me, and we were feeding off of each other, which just made things worse. And I forgot to mention this. My husband travels often for work, so oftentimes it's just me and the kids. And going from one to two might as well be going from one to a dozen.
Right.
It's so much harder than I ever could have imagined. I knew that two kids was going to be hard. I did not imagine how much harder in actuality it is. But he had gotten home. He'd been gone the week before, and he was home, and it was just It started on Monday. It's just this feeling that I don't want to do this anymore. I can't. I want to run away. And that thought grew over the next few days into I don't want to live anymore. I can't. I don't want to be on this earth because I don't know how I'm going to do this another day. Sorry. Oof. Ugh. So it January 17th started at 5:30 in the morning when my baby was up for the day. And I remember sitting in her room in her rocker trying desperately to get her back to sleep because I was so tired. And she was not having it. So the day began at 5:30. And I was just in this darkness. I can't even remember the events of the day. I don't even know how I got through the day. I just remember thinking, I can't do this another day. It's impossible. I don't want to do it. I want to not be here. And it was 10 o'clock that night that I was rocking the baby, trying to get her to sleep. And I was just, I don't even know how I had any energy left. I'm tired just thinking about it. And she was screaming and screaming and screaming. She would not go to sleep. And I put her down. And thank God I am where I am now. And I had the emotional maturity to recognize these feelings. But I put her down in her crib and I walked into my husband's room and I told him, you need to put the gun away in the gun safe because I am going to use it on myself. I said, I cannot do this another day. I can't do it another minute. I want to die. And of course, he called my mom. He stayed calm, and he called my mom, and my mom and dad came over, and they got the kids. And they were asking me, they were saying, please let us take you to the hospital. And because of that awful experience that I had 13 years ago, I did not want to go. I just kept telling them, I just need to sleep. I just need to sleep. Like, just please, I just need to sleep in my own bed. So my parents slept with my daughters. I don't think my husband slept at all that night. He was probably watching me. I slept like a log all night long. And then the next morning, I woke up, and the sun was coming through my window, and I knew that I didn't want to die, but I just didn't know how to do it, and I didn't know how to live like this another day, which that's an important distinction that people need to know, that I really want to emphasize, the difference between wanting to die and not wanting to live another day like you're living. Because that can be the difference between life and death. I woke up, it was about 11 o'clock, and my husband had called both my doctor and my, he's wonderful, he's so great. He had called both my doctor and my therapist, and we had appointments for both. And the thing that really sucked is that there wasn't a whole lot we could do medication wise. My doctor wanted to put me on a different medication, a newer medication, but it hadn't been tested enough for breastfeeding issues. And I was still breastfeeding at this point because I still am, actually, because my daughter refused bottles, just wouldn't take a bottle, and wouldn't eat any solid food. So literally, my child was literally living off of me. I was the only thing keeping my child alive. I had a 3-hour tether to my child, so I couldn't just drop her off for a couple of hours and go somewhere. I mean, she was literally, I was 24/7 taking care of my baby, which I know, I'm going to go off on a tangent. People are like, well, that's your baby. That's what you're supposed to do. But in all honesty, we are not meant to do this alone. Like, we used to live in villages and tribes where we took care of each other's children. It's really not normal for a mother to be with her child every single second of every single day and not have anyone help her. Like, we are not, that's not the way we were always intended to do this. And I wish we still lived in villages. Like I said, thank God I have my mom who's retired, who is basically my whole village. I went off on a tangent and I forgot where I was.
You were still breastfeeding.
I was still breastfeeding. There wasn't a lot that we could do. So basically, we came up with a plan to, we increased my Zoloft a little bit more. I started going to my therapist like once to twice a week. And then it was really just, I needed to be more vocal about needing help. And my husband needed to be more vocal, he needed to help me more, basically, which he wasn't not helping me before. It's just, I wasn't asking for help. And it was making sure that I had some self-care time. So like I said, nothing is a quick fix when it comes to mental health. And I still struggle tremendously after that. But I just, we started prioritizing time for myself, my husband. We ordered a meal delivery service so that, you know, I didn't have to cook or meal prep, which was really helpful. And it was just kind of small things that, pardon me, that we started doing to really just take as much of the day-to-day burden off of me as we could. And then I can't really say, things just kind of, as you say, they get better. They really do get better with time. At 8 months, my baby will be 10 months here next week. And at 8 months, I did baby boot camp sleep training, and it took a week, and she started sleeping better. She started waking only once a night to eat, and knock on wood, for the past 8 nights, she has slept straight through the night. Which, I mean, just sleep. I cannot emphasize enough how important sleep is and what happens to your brain and your body when you don't get sleep. That's the one thing that I just want to wrap my arms around brand new moms who have newborns and just give them all the sleepy vibes and just tell them, like, it's gonna get better, like, and your baby will sleep eventually, I promise. But now we're to a place, of course, winter has finally ended, and I'm able to get outside, and so I've been outside more, and I take the girls on walks, and I mean, really, even just, and I always hated it when people told me this is a solution, because I'm lazy and I don't like doing it, but exercise, even if it's just a quick walk around the neighborhood, it just helps tremendously. And you know, rest and talking. Oh man, talking. I talk to just about every mom I meet out in the wild, and it's just so important to share stories and talk and let other moms know that it does get better. Cause I'm still kind of in it. I feel a lot better than I did, but there are days when my dog is barking in his sleep. Charlie. There are still days where God, how am I going to do this? How am I going to get through this? It's so hard.
It gets easier. I feel like, now that Julian's 2.5 and Pippa's 5, and we're done. Oh my God, we're done.
Yeah.
It feels, I don't want to be back where you are at all. I have the photos.
I know.
At videos sometimes, and that's all I need. And now they play together for hours on end. It's glorious.
That's wonderful.
It really gets easier. And anyone who's telling you it doesn't, they're an asshole, and they're lying.
Oh, I know.
Because I'm sorry, the difference between a 10-month-old who was recently not sleeping, and a 2.5-year-old, I will take tantrums all day.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That is exactly what I say. I will take it. Listen, anything my 3 and 3.5-year-old can throw at me, I can take it as long as I get sleep and if I get to eat a hot meal once a day. Let me have it, kids. Give me your worst. I will deal with it. So funny. I say that all the time.
Yeah, tantrums like the terrible twos. I'm like, no, it's all the terrible ones and not sleeping through the night. Everything after that, it's like, we can do this. I've had enough sleep. We can do this.
One of the most hated phrase for me in motherhood, I'll just wait until, no, you just wait until, because I have just wait until they start crawling. I love when they start crawling. My 10-month-old just started crawling, and now she doesn't cry because she can follow me anywhere. I don't have to carry her. It's great.
Yes. And they burn off more energy, so they sleep better.
Yes, exactly. All good things. Just wait until they start talking. I love having conversations with my 3-year-old. She is the funniest person I know. I'm like, oh, I hate when people say, oh, just wait until. Okay, whatever.
Well, but I loved having you on the show today, and I think we're going to need you to come back in, like, 6 months or a year when you're feeling even better.
I would love to come back in 6 months or a year, because I know deep down, I have a 3-year-old, I know how much better it gets. And so, I'm excited. For the first time in a year and a half, I am hopeful. I see the light. I feel like I'm almost through that forest. Almost through. Just need to make it a little farther.
Well, I am rooting for you, and I want you back here so that we can hear when you're through the forest.
I would be happy to.
All right. Thank you for coming on the show today, Lauren.
Thanks for having me, Courtney.
So that is it for this week. Thank you, Lauren, so much for coming on the show and sharing your story. I love talking to you, and I'm excited to have you back for an update on your postpartum adventures. If you are interested in a deeper dive into my personal story, my memoir, which is also called Adventures with Postpartum Depression, is now available on Amazon. I set the prices as low as Amazon would allow. So it's $7.99 for the paperback, and I'm getting a whopping 25-cent royalty from that. But you know what? I just want to share the story, and also I want to get some reviews. So if you've read the book, I'd love it if you got a review. Reviews, it's an act of advocacy because it helps get the story out there and helps people who want to read the book, who need to read the book, find the book. And so $7.99 for the paperback, $2.99 for the ebook. Or if you like free, go visit my website, ppdadventures.com, for the link to get your free copy of the ebook in whatever format your heart desires. Show notes are also available at ppdadventures.com. Our guest, Lauren, has written a couple of posts for the Scary Mommy website, so I've included links to those articles in the show notes. And if you'd like to share your story on a future episode, please email me at courtney@ppdadventures.com. Postpartum depression and all maternal mood disorders, from pregnancy depression to postpartum psychosis, can be incredibly isolating. My tongue is just gets tired so quickly. But you are not alone. There are thousands of moms suffering with you right now, and there are thousands more who suffered in the past and are trying to shine the light for you to help you find your way. With support and help, you can and will make a full recovery. I love you, and I hope you have a wonderful week.